Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
But now, it is time for Mariella Meets, and this is where every day I speak in depth to fascinating people from the worlds of entertainment, the arts, and public life. But maybe today I've met my match, because my guest this afternoon does something very similar for an award-winning, chart-topping live podcast he's now taking on tour. He's best known, though, as a comedian, as a TV regular, enduring stand-up star, and former partner of Stuart Lee, professional partner, I should point out. He's also the author of 9 books, including Can I Have My Ball Back? A memoir of his experience with testicular cancer. Richard Herring, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello. Can we just start maybe with Can I Have My Ball Back? Because what I was really interested in terms of sort of things you've said about it, was the idea that even though this was really bad news, obviously, when you were diagnosed, that there was a part of you that thought, excellent material. Is that actually true?
Well, yeah, I think as a comedian, on every comedian I've talked to kind of goes, have you managed to get something like this? Because as long as it doesn't kill you, and even if it kills you eventually, there's comedy and everything. So, you know, I sort of was aware of, you know, this it sort of felt weird that this happened to me, because I've concentrated on this area quite a lot in my career. I did a male answer to the Vagina Monologues, which was a show and a book. A show called Hitler Mustache, and now I've got the same number of testicles as Hitler supposedly has. So there was all these kind of weird coincidences coming in. So you could see, but it was a weird thing, because obviously, as scary as it was right at the beginning, especially, funny things were happening all the time. So, you know, I've written a book about it. I'm working up as a stand-up show, and you sort of balance it up and go, how much would you sell a testicle for? And you might go, okay, well, the 3 years work for one testicle is pretty good value.
So you've done the equation, with a head for economics, as I can see, Richard.
Yeah, it's a pound of flesh, isn't it, I suppose? So, yeah.
Basically. Yeah. Well, that was quite a big testicle then, obviously.
It was by the time it came out, Mariella. I don't want to go into too much details, but yes, it was.
Well, funnily enough, on the mention of not going into too much details, I did wonder, you know, I mean, you talked about, you know, personal and scary, those two elements. Do you think anything can be too personal or too scary, or do you think that those absolutely are what lend themselves to the best sort of comedy, that somehow it has to be painful?
It doesn't have to be painful. Yeah, it doesn't have to be painful, but I think the great thing about something awful happening is if you can confront it with humor. If you've got no control over the situation, especially with something like cancer, obviously you're not really in control. You're hoping the doctors can control it. So I think if you can face it in a positive way and in a humorous way, it just really helps you. And I think also the great thing about being a comedian, maybe unusually for men, is I talk about everything. And by talking about everything, you help yourself, you help other people. Also, you know, my wife and I discussed whether I would go public with this. But I'm delighted I did, because even at the time, because I got lots of messages from people saying, oh, I've been through this and it's okay, and it's 30 years ago and I'm fine. So, you know, it's a reciprocal thing. But by finding the humour in something, I think you get power over it. Even if it's, you know, as it turns out, testicular cancer, I didn't find out until after the testicle had been removed. It's one that a lot of people survive. So it's got a 95 to 99% survival rate. But, you know, which doesn't diminish it, but it's out of all the cancers to get, it was, you know, the luckiest and probably the funniest as well, unfortunately, just because of the area it's in.
I'm laughing because you'd think that they would have told you that in order to set your mind at rest as you went into the sort of scary ride that was, treatment and so on.
Yeah, I would have liked if they had, but you know, and that's my only criticism. The NHS were amazing. This all happened in early 2021. So they were busy with other stuff, but they were absolutely amazing. I think they couldn't confirm it was cancer until it was out. So I think they're not allowed to talk about cancer until it's confirmed as cancer. But equally, by thinking, I generally thought I'd had it. I'd had a friend who died just a few months before and in similar circumstances to me. And it was quite good to be confronted with your own mortality, to think about what was important to you. And, you know, it made me sort of determined to make the best of however long I've got left, really, which, you know, I think I was living quite an unhealthy life anyway, regardless of the cancer, which has nothing to do with that. But, you know, so it kind of pushed me towards better health and appreciating being alive while we're alive.
But that must have made it even more terrifying. You say you lost a friend to the same condition a few months before.
He had a sort of much worse cancer, but he was in, he had a young, I've got a very young family. He's the same age as me, but his son was 7 when he died. So I'd literally just before lockdown been, you know, doing the eulogy at his funeral. And so I just, you know, in the moment that I got the news that there was something in there. Yeah, it was like, I was thinking of him, but I was also thinking of my kids, you know, obviously that's going to be your priority, in the moment I got the phone call through, I wasn't thinking, oh, brilliant, I can do that show after all. I was thinking, oh, no, you know, and quickly working out how I would provide for my family if the worst happened. So, yeah. But it's quite good to be forced to confront that, and it's quite good to check your priorities. I'm back on the road now. I'm going to take this podcast out on tour and probably do a tour of this stand-up show. But I've been deliberately spending more time with my family. You know, in lockdown we had to, obviously, but I've sort of realised, you know, what's more important. And obviously, you have to work a bit to keep your family alive. But equally, I really appreciate what I've got as a result of all this. I think
I may have got the timing wrong, but I think you actually campaigned around the issue of testicular cancer even before you had it. But certainly, you've talked about it a lot subsequently, and you won't find anyone more committed than me to drawing attention to the fact that women's health is underinvested in, and you know, needs an awful lot more work, and so
of
on.
Course.
But I wonder if you feel that the same is true of. I mean, I'm always really quite surprised that prostate cancer, for example, and maybe testicular cancer, which I know less about, aren't, you know, screened properly and regularly in the same way as women have, you know, breast cancer screenings and so on. It feels like that particular area of men's health hasn't really moved with the times.
No, I'd agree with that. Yeah, and I did. I'd done Movember like a month and a half before I found out I had testicular cancer. So in a way, luckily, I'd raised some funds to help myself, I suppose, which was quite good, but unknowingly. But yeah, it's, you know, I think with men, you know, and I left it for a few weeks before I went to the doctors. So when, especially with these areas, we kind of don't talk enough about it and have a stiff upper lip. Obviously, like with COVID going on, I sort of thinking I don't want to worry anyone with my, you know, my oversized testicle while they're going through all this other stuff. So, you know, yeah, it is something that, absolutely for men and women, but we should be taking more time with. And I think it's with testicular cancer and breast cancer as well, it's getting to know yourself. And, you know, and if you notice anything different, just get straight to your GP. And I was absolutely flabbergasted with how efficient and brilliant the NHS were at this worst time to possibly get cancer as well. So, you know, and it was so fast and so efficient. And aside from them not telling me that I had a very good chance of surviving, it was brilliantly run.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You've talked about this on your podcast, so those who are listening who are regular listeners to your podcast will probably be unsurprised by some of the material we're covering. It's been hugely successful. Obviously, it couldn't be live during the pandemic, but I think it started just before, didn't it?
No, I've been doing this podcast for like a long time, 12 years or something like that. So I've been podcasting for 16 years, I think, and I started this one 12 years ago. So it's been going on a long time. And then in lockdown, I love doing it because it's unusually amongst these sort of interview podcasts, there's an audience, and the audience is very much the 12th man. And I think it's having the reaction from the audience that gets my guests to open up as much as they have done, as well as being as funny as they are.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I did I do one here called Books to Live By. Mm-hmm. You know, where people pick their five books that have sort of shaped their lives, and I've always done them, you know, one on one. And then quite recently we took them to a literary festival in Ireland, in fact, and Ruby Wax was one of my guests, and it was, I mean, I've interviewed her quite a number of times before, but it was completely different with the audience there. I would say a much improved encounter, even though Ruby's a great interviewee anyway, but it's strange that having an audience there should lead people to being more confessional than they would be in a smaller environment, in a one-on-one. Why do you think that is?
I think I've got a very lovely audience that come to see all of my stuff. I've created this audience over time. We did some TV in the 90s, and I do TV every now and again, but basically people who come to see me like me and know what I'm doing, and I think are generally a very good comedy audience, but they listen to the serious bits, they laugh at the funny bits. And I think with the early examples where I had Stephen Fry on, and he was extremely funny for an hour, and then I'd actually asked a question that a child had asked, was what's it like being Stephen Fry? And he opened up about a suicide attempt that he'd never talked about. But I genuinely think it was just because there was such an amazing atmosphere of love and respect in the room that he felt in a safe place to do it. So, you know, if the audience are laughing, if the audience are respectful, which they nearly always are, then I think it just draws something out. And, you know, as entertainers, people want to, if you've got an audience there, you want to make them laugh. So I ask questions that they've never been asked before, and that I know they won't necessarily have an answer for. And that's the best way, I think, to make them, they come up with a story that they haven't told before. They're trying to please. And then by having opened up that part of the mind, which isn't just reciting the stories I've told 1,000 times in interviews before, I think you suddenly get new, fresh stuff as the other side of the brain or whatever has been utilized. So it's all accidental, and it's sort of, I never anticipated podcasts becoming like what they are. That it's my main source of income now by a long way. And, when I started, it was all free, and I just did it because of the autonomy and the freedom it gave me. But I've never really done anything for this long. You know, it's for 12 years is a long time to do the same thing, but it feels like a different show every time based on whichever guest you get. And I had fantastic guests on, so it's been amazing.
And can you honestly say that you don't try and extract those morsels of information that are original and new, which is quite hard to do, let's face it, in a world where everybody's interviewing everybody? I mean, that's what the podcast world seems to have become. It's just this whole crew of people who go round and round in circles talking in different combinations. ones.
Yeah.
So it does make it hard, doesn't it, to make yours unique?
It does. And I think, you know, again, I think because in an early interview, I was interviewing Jonathan Ross and I suddenly dried up and I think I was nervous because he was an interviewer and I couldn't think of anything to say for like 5 seconds, but it felt like a lifetime. So I started writing down just stupid questions to ask in that situation that were called emergency questions if I went wrong. And, you know, they turned out to be this sort of little key that opened people up. So I think by ask, you know, I've been interviewed a lot and I'm asked the same questions again and again. If someone asks you about a failed project or an obscure project or just a part of your life you've never talked about before, you're just delighted because it's, you go, oh, I get to talk about a different thing. So, you know, I think that's it. And I think the guests trust me. They know I'm not trying to stitch them up or, you know, I'm not even interested in getting personal stuff. But if they want to give that, I will take it. You know, so I think they trust me. And I think that's because they know I'm sort of sit in the center of being, you know, not as successful as most of them, but also having done the job for 35 years or however long I've been doing it. So they get that I get what's going on, I think.
You talked to one of your guests, the wonderful Michael Palin, about the worst moment in his career. He sounded quite surprised that you'd brought it up to start with, which was when he was written out of You've Got Mail.
Yeah.
And you know, that which came as a surprise to him. Have you got a You've Got Mail moment? What's the worst thing, like the most painful thing that you can remember that happened in your career?
I mean, there's a couple
in mind. No, I'm saying I've got quite a long list, but luckily this isn't me being interviewed.
There are a lot. I think it's, you know, they're not necessarily funny. They're when you get sacked from things. I kind of, you know, I think the worst one was I'd never rewritten in a team. I was writing. I wrote for a show called Breeders, which has done incredibly well and won lots of awards, and Martin Freeman's in it. They, in the end, I gave him my episode, a rough draft, and they kind of rang me up and said, this is nowhere near ready. We're going to get someone else to write it. So, you know, and then I had to advertise Breeders on my podcast and, you know, I had to go, this is a fantastic show that I'm not involved in anymore. But I didn't mention that. But yeah, so I think those failures are the things, you know, that get you most. I think the producer could have been a bit nicer about it, just said, thanks for that. We'll put this into the process and not necessarily say it wasn't good enough.
How do you bounce back from that? I mean, how do you stop it from torturing you, those dark nights of the soul, or do you have them?
I mean, you know, I think it's really, as a creative person, it's very difficult because, you know, you are, obviously I've worked for there a long time, so I feel like I'm probably okay, but equally I haven't had like a blockbusting massive success, and I've written a lot of scripts that haven't got there, you know, they haven't got onto TV or got a certain distance and then stopped. So that one was quite tough. And I think there was just, if something else came along that sort of made me think, okay, maybe I'll carry on writing. But it was almost enough to make me think, okay, I'm not, you know, I've not got this anymore or I've lost whatever I had. So, but I think as a comedian, that's it, you know, your life is full of these highs and lows. And I did a gig with a few other comedians in front of 1,000 people in Ealing the other night. And it went amazingly well in front of that big audience with new material. And you walk off feeling like you're like a god, you know, you feel like you're so full of confidence. So you've got these moments that make you think you're the greatest human being that's ever lived. And you've got these moments that make you feel like you're a complete failure. And you've just got to balance it up. And I think the failures are what make you. And I think, you know, obviously I had success early on with a double actor, and then that basically got, you know, we did 4 series of the BBC and then someone else took over, didn't like us, and neither of us worked for on TV for a few years. You have to go, but I think it was the best thing that could happen to both me and Stuart in that we had to pick ourselves up and start again. And we'd had quite a charmed life up to that point. And I think if you just have success, 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 it's hard to be, to find the real, you know, the pearls, I suppose, in the middle of the oysters if you've just gone from success to success. So my failures are important in my life, and the difficult times have been important to move on. And then you work through them in stand-up shows, as I have done with testicular cancer, depression, and, you know, some happy things, meeting my wife, where I worked through falling in love and having children. So it's, you know, it's a wonderful job to have in that sense, and hopefully you're making people laugh as you go.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out for a chance to win the French Open title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV, live in HD. Don't miss a moment with daily live coverage and match replays on demand, beginning Monday, May 20th. Be there for all the unforgettable moments. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.